It's the Tiltcast, episode 578, Man Cakes.
And this week, guys, we talk Pacific Drive, Yakuza Infinite Wealth, and Dragon's Dogma 2. Stay tuned.
Yep, they look slappable. And we are back. It is the Tiltcast. It is an M-rated show. I'm Nos.
I'm Jason.
There's no Rusty. And with the two of us, you're going to get about, I don't know, maybe 30 minutes of bullshit.
Maybe.
Some games, some news. Rusty's out today. He's had a migraine. He's had family stuff he's had to do on top of recovering from a migraine. So we're just letting him be. Yep. And me and Jason are going to do
much like y'all did for me last week.
Basically.
Much appreciated. So as you're, I mean, you guys aren't going to see a gap because we actually had a couple of episodes in the can for once. We even missed last week because I had like a epic freaking migraine.
Yeah, migraines between you two. I used to have them a lot more than I do now. I think for me, it was blue light. And ever since I started wearing blue blockers, I haven't had a migraine, I don't know, 2 or 3 years at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been more diligent about wearing mine, but also I've had fewer than I used to just for the simple fact that my office is mostly a cave that's lit by TVs that have the low blue light features on.
Yeah, my office is kind of blacked out because you and Rusty installed this black soundproofing stuff in what turned into my home office, which used to just be my studio.
Which means even when you have a migraine, you can be in there because all you got to do is put that one panel back down and you're complete blackout in that room.
Yeah, I had to take off the panel over the window because it felt too much like being in limbo, What do they call those? Not decompression tanks, but you know what I'm talking about. Like the tank of water where you're in nothing but blackness.
Oh, yeah, like a hydro tank, yeah.
Yeah, I forget what they call those. I've never done that because I think my anxiety would get the most best of me in that situation. Never wanted to spend money on being floating and in the limbo. Not really my thing. I guess that's why drugs aren't really my thing either. So there you go. Don't do drugs. It sucks. But yeah, it's been the last 2 weeks I've been beating games while you and Rusty have been recovering. Dragon's Dogma came out. I've got some good initial impressions from that. So can talk about that a little bit. The state of Helldivers has changed a lot over the last couple of weeks, which is great. Everybody's hearing lots and lots and lots of Helldivers news, and that's because that game continues to evolve.
Overall, that game just continues to impress. I mean, realistically, for a studio that small, the fact that the primary issues have been that they've had to figure out how to fix the servers for the number of players they were getting. That says something.
Yeah, they've had some issues too. Like, servers are a little bit unstable right now, and it's caused some issues for some major orders. I guess backing up, well, I'll just mix it all in. Because both me and you have been doing things, but not really interesting to the podcast. but, like, the Helldiver stuff. So what they're doing is they'll set out a major order and it kind of dynamically ties into whatever storyline they're going for. So there was a rumor about mechs, right? They'd shown a trailer with mechs and people were like, where's the mechs? And they're like, neither confirm nor deny, right? And then there was a major order that said there's a mech factory on this planet. You have to liberate it. So people liberated the planet, and liberation just means that so many people won so many matches at varying levels of difficulty and et cetera, and it causes a ticker to time tie down that I guess represents the amount of missions won on that planet. And so, anyways, people liberated the planet. And then the mechs became available. And then for a little while, it was free mechs for everybody all the time. And then you had to unlock the stratagem, right? Which is great. The mechs are pretty useful. They're tanky enough to take some hits, but not all the hits. Like, you can get hit by a charger, which is basically an elite enemy, about three or four times before you go down. And honestly, they're easy enough to take down without the mech. But with the mech, like, they're good support. They mow down littles. They mow down everything pretty efficiently as long as they don't get overrun. And they're a great stratagem to use. They have a pretty long cooldown, though. So having at least one person in the party with a mech is great. And so they were saying there was another major order that went out that me and Rusty were playing, where you needed to exterminate so many bugs, right? And so they created a new mission type where you had to go to these towers. And at the towers, you had to defend a point for so long and keep enemies and yourself from shooting the basically the power bank surrounding the tower. So you'd initiate it, bugs would spawn. You'd have to go protect the banks of basically the battery banks around the bottom. And then once you got to enough of a degree, it charged up the battery and you moved to the next one. And then eventually you moved to the last one, which basically threw out the bug bomb, so to speak, right? Like basically did a bug bomb across the entire planet. And so that was like a mission type that was attached to everything. It was exceptionally hard until you got a really good feel for how to do it. It took a lot of coordination, and me and Rusty failed a few times. I got some of my newbie buddies in from World of Warcraft. Real good at communication, though. They were several levels below me, and we were doing a level 7 with them, and we did quite well. So we were winning those. And then after they liberated that, they created another major order. So, like, right now, they're wanting everybody to take two planets, and right now we're failing because the order is hard and there's network issues. So there's talk about if they're going to roll back the order or give a new order, and then I think what's going to happen is we're just going to fail it, and then we'll get a new order later. But, like, one of the things that popped up during this is there was flyers that popped up, these flyer nests. And they're flying bugs that have bat wings, and they can take your head off. So, like, they can dive bomb you and take your head off. Me and Rusty had started seeing those. I thought it was a spore thing. So, like, there's, like, a spore spreader. It looks like a giant mushroom, and it, like, covers the entire battlefield in fog and makes it really hard to see. And we were on a mission. It was not official that these flyers were even a thing. And I shot it with an RPG, thinking, all right, got the spore thing. Well, it wasn't a spore. It was a tower full of those flying animals. And it's a whole nest. And you have to go up and basically put a mini nuke, plant a mini nuke in the middle of it, and then run away. Well, they're really dangerous. I think on our first try, me and Rusty lost 3/4 of our reinforcements going up against one. It's intense. So then I switch strategies, got a flaming, basically like a dragon fire shotgun, right? The incendiary breaker. And I started for me and Rusty's team, I was essentially on flyer support. So anytime I saw flyers, I was just shooting skeet and taking them all down. Cause the nice thing about that incendiary shotgun is even if you don't kill it outright, they're on fire, they're staggered, and they'll eventually drop from the sky. So I basically just have to like paint the sky with fire. And, I take that shit down. It's super effective versus the flyers. So if I was not near the party, they were having difficulty taking them down. And if I was, like, no fucking big deal. But they're really dangerous. They're not that tough. It's just they're hard to hit with a standard weapon. And with a shotgun, they're easy. And with a fire shotgun, they're amazing. They're super easy, as long as you don't get surprised. But they can one or two shot you pretty often. And so that game just continues to evolve. It's just, it keeps changing. They keep changing up what they're wanting you to do. And they keep adding things, like real time, right? and they just added a new battle pass, which I think was $10, which unlocks a whole bunch of new weapons, essentially, like if you're beyond the basics. So the battle passes unlock new stuff. They're not incredibly expensive. There's been two so far. I bought the base game for $31, so to date, I've spent like $51. I've spent less than the full price of a new game. And had way more fun messing with it. But like Helldivers continues to impress. Like Rusty's all the way to the end. All he's doing is unlocking new shit as it comes out. So, easily right now, game of the year. Like there's nothing touching Helldivers right now.
Nice. Well, I mean, that's better than me. Like last week after the. After the migraine, mostly all I did was finish my New Game Plus on RoboCop, and then...
What, New Game Plus 3?
Yeah. God, that game's just so fun just to sit down, turn your brain off, and play. Right? You don't need a whole lot of brain power for it.
Yeah.
Also, just from there, just been spending time with the fam because the kids' spring break started last Thursday.
So that ends this weekend?
So it's been all kid activities. Yeah, that ends this weekend. Done some interesting stuff. Like we played a couple of new board games. Crystal picked up Catan, Dawn of Humankind, which is actually pretty cool. It's a lot of core gameplay for Catan's there, but instead of having a completely randomized setup board, there's only a certain section of the board that you randomly add resource tokens to. Which is the number you have to roll on the dice to gain them. Otherwise, the entire, four quarters of the board's already filled out. And instead of specifically building and upgrading settlements to win, as the main objective, you have two main objectives that you can technically win by, and that is going to different exploration points around the board and collecting those, or going to different points and setting up camps around the board. But you only have a limited number of camps that you can set up. So, as you get later in the game, you're literally moving camps from one area to another one on the board. So what resources you can gather on a given dice roll can change throughout the game, which is pretty cool. So it changes the gameplay up enough that it's that it kind of really makes that game fun again. And then we got, she got another one called, Pandemic. So kind of think Plague Inc., but in the reverse. So instead of being the infection that has spread across the world, you and up to three other players are playing to, find cures for the four different disease types before one of the diseases completely propagates. So in other words, it runs out of tokens to place on the board. You run out of draw pile cards, or you experience enough outbreaks throughout the game for the diseases to win. So it's kind of a race the clock game, which is pretty cool. So we had a good bit of games going. Of course, we played a bunch of board games that we normally play too. And probably the biggest thing we did this last week was we took the kids for a day of bowling and laser tag sessions. And in our second laser tag session, I took one to the knee.
You took a laser to the knee? Or you blew out your knee?
I practically almost blew it out. So the laser tag course we were at, two levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up the ramp to go to the second level. And I tagged like two opposing players the second I get to the top. And I go to turn around. And of course, they tell you don't run, but that doesn't mean you can't walk briskly, right?
Right.
So I go to turn around, and as I turn around, I just slam my right knee just above the kneecap, right into the corner of this little pony wall at the top of the ramp. And just completely bruised everything.
How is it that you're both the youngest and oldest person on this show?
I've done more things to punish the shit out of my body.
I suppose so.
I mean, I definitely played more contact sports than any of you guys.
So that's the moral of this story. Don't play sports.
No, don't play contact sports. Choose the safer sports, you know, like tennis and golf and disc golf.
Yeah, never.
Any sport that doesn't require, or shoot, for the most part, even baseball, though, you know, you can have accidents in baseball. At least the goal of baseball is not to directly come in contact with another person. I mean, I grew up playing soccer, hockey, and football, so I had a lot of other body contact with people.
Yeah, video games never let me down.
Yeah, that's very much true. So, you know, we had a bunch of fun this week, but not anything that's really super interesting for the show other than me injuring myself.
Yeah. I played a lot of games that let me listen to music while I played them. Aside from Helldivers, because Helldivers is all about communication. And I've been, I guess, to nerd out a little bit about sound design and music, I was trying to tune my sub. And what that means is I'm trying to get my crossover to mesh so well that you can't tell I have a sub, but you can tell I have a sub. Does that make sense? So
yeah, so you're trying to get it blended so much that you can kind of feel it, but that's not like all you feel.
Right. So I went way into the weeds with my setup this last week, going and figuring out what position my sub needed to be in the room and what angle it needed to be. And just, I guess, not really pro tip because I'm not a pro, but experience tip, right? Playing with the position of your sub before you tune it is probably the best bet. So I did that until I wasn't rattling all this stuff on the wall in the hallway, which helped a lot. Then pulling it up off the wall about a foot instead of about 8 inches made a huge difference. And then I went into playing with my crossover settings until I found the frequency where it blended the best. So the crazy thing is my amp, to get into the sub menus, you have to go and plug in an HDMI to a TV. So I did that. Initially, I was just going to leave it like that because the sound over HDMI is ever so slightly better than the USB to RCA that I'm using. It's not that much difference because the... Okay, I won't go too far into the weeds, but...
No, they, but you, they, do, the, get, there's you a, do get a higher bit rate, and you're not losing that... you're not losing any transition or anything in translation, because USB to RCA is basically changing a digital signal into electrical pulses that'll read over the RCA, and you lose a little bit in that conversion.
Right. Well, so one of the things, like, again, diving way into the weeds and then right back out. Like, I was trying to figure out, do I need to get a CD player, right? And I was like, okay, so what's the differences on CD players on price? Well, it's the DAC, the, you know, digital to analog conversion, right? And the higher the quality of the DAC, the better the conversion. Well, the thing is my PC on the motherboard actually has one of the best DACs you can get for that conversion. So, like, unless I go into spending $800 to $1,000 on a CD player, I'm not going to notice any difference in the DAC. So the DAC's good, right? Then the next part is I can get 192-bit conversion on the HDMI, or I can get 96-bit conversion on... I might be saying that wrong. But anyways, it's a pretty bit stark difference in conversion between the HDMI and the USB, but the DAC going to the USB, going to my stereo, is also very high quality. And it's so much so that I can barely tell the difference between the two. So, long story short, there's not a lot of additional compression or strange spatial noise that happens between the two, and I don't have to have my amp on the channel for that TV. So basically, I was in a state where if I did the HDMI, I would not be able to play records unless with my computer on and still have that TV on. So it was getting complicated in a stupid way. And so I decided I was just going to go with the USB DAC, which made it to where I didn't have to look at submenus while I was listening to it. And also the sound quality is so close, I can barely tell a difference. All that to say, I've been listening to, music quite a bit while I've been playing games. And, the app that I'm using is for Windows Media Audio is not the built-in one. I'm using something called FUBAR, and FUBAR lets me adjust the level a lot higher than anything else. So if I'm playing a game, like, it sets the noise floor for the game to like 1/4 of what the CD is. And then I can adjust the decibel difference between the two more. It's like kind of like a Stream Deck, right? But digitally. And without having to go into my mixer controls on the computer to change that noise floor. So I can still hear my game sound in the background while I have the music like way over the top. And the quality of FUBAR's like digital conversion for CDs is way better than Windows Media Audio. Or I tried Winamp again. It's way better than Winamp. And yeah, I went in there and changed my, Hertz ratio until it blended really well. I've got my stereo like tuned as good, better than I've ever had it tuned before, but I've been playing a lot of CDs because they're a lot cheaper than albums. And some of the albums I want are way out of print, and I'm going through my back catalog trying to figure out like what CDs I need to toss and which ones I want to keep. And surprisingly, some of my old CDRs, I won't say what albums, I don't want to get in trouble, right? But a long time ago, I had a few CDRs that I pulled off the internet. And surprisingly, those have held up over 25 years. Like, we're talking about stuff from the 90s, which is funny. But some of those I've got an Amazon order at my door to replace those that are dead now. So yeah, I've been listening to CDs and albums while I've been doing this. And then side note, if you guys are a fan of White Zombie, Astro Creep 2000 on the 180-gram re-release and remaster of that sounds phenomenal. I was jamming out to that yesterday.
That sounds amazing.
The Astro Creep, it does not have the extra track after Blood, Milk, and Sky, but all that is samples anyway and like two riffs. So I don't really care that much. But the... It sounds phenomenal. and I've been just listening to music. And part of that, I've got two games that I beat. I did beat Yakuza Infinite Wealth. And I will say, in retrospect, it took me like 75 hours or somewhere abouts to finally finish that game. That game's overlong by about 25 hours. I'm just going to say that. I think it's about 25 hours too long. It's grindy and kind of a fatiguing way. And after about 50 hours, I wasn't having nearly as much fun, and I was skipping the majority of the story. Like, I was speed reading through all of it, right? It's like cutscene. Oh, God, here we go again. I would say 25 hours of that game is probably cutscene. Like, no joke.
Damn. That's a shame, because I thought
you might like it.
Like a Dragon was an excellent game.
I think that game's too, but I think I remember why I stopped playing it. I got fatigued after the amount of cutscenes and the grind. The combat's better in Infinite Wealth than in Like a Dragon, but like honestly, I'm sitting somewhere between 4 and 4.25 out of 5, and for me, it's about 4.15. Like, it's good. Right? Like, it's not a bad score. Worth playing, just be forewarned that it's very grindy. The end of the game is a little bit goofy. It splits the story between two main protagonists a lot of the time, and it feels a little bit disjointed, and I didn't like that. Because it reuses a lot of assets from the first game in character A's story, and then in Ichiban's story, most of that takes place in Hawaii, except for the first 10 hours or so. It takes like 10 hours to get going. It does take a while to just kind of spin its engines up. But it's not as good as I wanted it to be, but it is good. But I was very glad to be done with it when I was done. I was like, oh, thank God I beat it before Dragon's Dogma came out. Oh, I got that done at the end of last week. And I also beat Pacific Drive, which I have a similar amount of hours. My Steam account's being funny right now, so I can't pull it up on my phone. I want to say I got about 65 hours in Pacific Drive, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. Towards the end, it's a little bit tedious. If you want to get every single upgrade, I decided I didn't need it because I was so upgraded, like I could survive anything, more or less. Like, so upgraded that my character literally could stand out, so like I tested it because I was trying to get... To unlock one of the abilities, you have to have your car completely destroyed and you have to die. And then you have to go back and find that ghost of a car and scan it. And, I never did that. And so I was like, okay, I need to go back and do that. But I upgraded my armor, right? Your character's like gear, so to speak. So much so that he could not drop below 36% health. So I stayed in a storm, like activated the final thing to get the storm going. And let the storm rage around me, and I had no tires, I had no doors, I had no hood, my engine was completely destroyed, my car was a shell, my character wouldn't die. And I tried to, like, jump through the hole to get back, and it said, no, you have to have your car. And I was like, wow. I couldn't get out of it, so in the middle of, like, this huge-ass storm that's, like, raging around me, I just can't die, my character's freaking immortal, which... in that case was kind of ridiculous. So like I went in the middle of this incredibly intense storm, like salvaging tires and everything else to like put on my car. And at a certain point I was like, I don't want to do this. I'm just going to load the last save and then exit. The last save puts you at the beginning of the zone. So I just did that and exited because I didn't want to come back with a car full of quirks and then have to diagnose and fix all of that, which would spend like 2 runs fixing all of it basically. To get the resources I needed to fix all the quirks or play the guessing game. So that probably needs fixed. Like, everybody should have a fail point, but like, that's how immortal my character was, right? Like, yeah, I just wouldn't go below that certain percentage and just wouldn't die. So, and maybe that, there's just like.
That almost sounds fundamentally broken.
Well, yeah, and I was just like, I had two options, right? Two paths, go and just unlock the rest of everything or just finish the game. When I figured out I couldn't unlock that thing and then it wasn't really necessary for me and I was already had a car that could get through pretty much everything, I just finished the game. And it finishes off just a little bit weird, but pretty satisfactory. It's not open for a sequel. It's kind of a one and done. They probably could make a sequel, but it's a good game. It's unique. No, it does not drive like real life. It's very arcadey driving. Like essentially towards, you just need the all terrain tires, honestly. I never found a use for the paddle tires. There's not enough water for it to matter. But basically, like, at a certain point, you become pretty immortal, and it's not that hard, and that's where I was at, and so I finished it. But if you haven't listened to other episodes, basically it's a game where you go around, you go into this zone that's very SCP, where the terrain randomly changes, and you unlock routes by going through these maps with your car. Scavenge resources, right? Tear stuff down and use that to re-outfit your car and also get unlock upgrades for your car so you can go further into the zone. And every, like, spot you unlock unlocks a hub to more paths to other zones. And every single time, like, these zones respawn the whole map. Like, it's not like it's a static map. It's just, these are the features that'll be in this map. All these maps have these anomalies, and these anomalies are dangerous for you and your car. So, for example, like, there's one called a tourist, and think of them like the angels from Doctor Who, right? Every time you look at them, they're frozen. They're mannequins. And then when you turn away, they move. And they're drawn to light. So, I guess, minor spoiler, you can throw flares at them, and they explode. And sometimes, to a ridiculous degree, like, you can – turns into a carpet bomb sometimes. But yeah, they creep up on you, and, you know, if you touch them, like, they explode. So, like, there's stuff like that. There's, like, these saws that are going through the ground. There's, like, pieces of ground that, like, shoot your car way up in the air and will flip you over. And sometimes that can lead to disastrous results. There's things that'll make your car float. There are these little speed boosts that are good anomalies. Like, some of the anomalies, like, are great for you. There are these, like, tourist bombs that are, like, these huge hunks of, like, twisted wrecks of mannequins that, like, explode, like, bombs that you can run into. Like, there's all sorts of, like, hazards you have to navigate. And, like, at a certain point, you're just driving off-road across everything.
So it's like, playing Death Race in a video game, but there's no other racers.
Kind of, yeah. Like, there's all these, like, hazards, right? And you collect energy from these things called anchors. And at a certain point, the area becomes unstable and these crazy storms start happening. And, like, you have to race towards an exit point, which is a pillar of light that you go into that warps you back to your garage. But the further you get in, like, sometimes the objective is just getting to the next map, which means driving through all of that. And you can choose if you want to throw resources in your car or if you want to just keep going. And then you got to manage a couple of resources, your gas and your battery and your health of your character. And, like, there's engines that are pure electricity, which I didn't like as much, although it wasn't as hard to deal with because I could throw basically a bunch of battery packs in my trunk, like, that's these things look like jumper cables that just charge your battery instantly. And you got all sorts of gadgets you can throw in your car to charge your battery, like, you can with wind power or solar power, or like an antenna that grabs electricity from electric anomalies or basically lightning. Or like a hydro generator, which are like these big tubes that are on the side of your car that collect rain and create electricity. But I just ended up going gas because I outfitted a huge gas tank and threw it on top of my car. And then I had something that made gas, a fuel synthesizer just made gas from anomalies. And at the end of every map, I just used my big gas can, siphoned gas off that, put it in my tank, and away I went. And so I just never worried about gas again after I got that thing. Because initially you're, like, going car to car, like, siphoning gas off with your gas, like, tiny-ass gas can. It does get better. But, yeah, towards the end, it was a really chaotic and good game. It's just, I think it was held back by a couple of broken-ass things, and then the performance wasn't crazy good for a while. But that's been mostly fixed. Super solid game, 4 or 5 out of 5. We'll play again if they add more content. It's a fantastic game. And was one that lent itself great to, listening to music while I played. And then for something I haven't beat, but I've already put about 20 hours into, that's Dragon's Dogma 2, which so far that is fantastic.
I mean, from everything I've seen, it looks really good.
The Capcom marketing team and production team are idiots, though. So, I'll explain. There's a whole bunch of microtransactions you can purchase that gets you access to items that are already in the game that you can buy with money in the game that don't become really much of an issue, like the change your facial features token, I think, is 20,000 gold in the game, which at 20 hours in the game, I have 75,000 gold on me right now. So easily obtainable if I really cared that much. The performance in town suffers quite a bit, so I really had to crank out the, really had to crank up my PC specs. And what I mean by that is I had to overclock my CPU. It's very CPU heavy in towns. I guess they explain that with all the individual physics for every character that's in a town. So for me, and I was showing Rusty, like, I on a 4090 with a 5900X at 4.5 gigahertz am struggling to stay over 50 FPS in a town. And I think Rusty was saying with a 3900, and he's got an i9, he's sitting at like 30 FPS in towns and then like a 90 to 100 outside of towns.
30 inside of towns with a 4090?
No, with a 3090, it's been a 50 to 60 or with mine. Yeah, 50 to 60 with me on a 4090. I don't have ray tracing on. I've heard that ray tracing really tanks the performance, and it's already suffering in towns enough, so I didn't want to tempt that. The graphics are pretty good, but people on Steam, the reason it is sitting at a lower rating is that like anything other than a 3 series card is like suffering on the performance unless you put it on looks like ass. Of course, people want to crank up all the pretties, right? The game's not incredibly, it's pretty good looking in general, but some of the texture work looks a little bit low poly and the game looks kind of dingy. So it really needs HDR to look pretty good.
But you know, one thing that's probably impacting Rusty, even with the 3090 though, I thought about it the other day when y'all were talking about it and I forgot to type it in. Rusty's and mine i9s. Yes, they're great i9s. Like the 9th gen i9 is awesome, but doesn't have resizable bar.
No, I didn't know that.
And resizable bar is a big thing with some of these games now.
I don't know if mine does either. I know I have a pretty big CPU cache.
You should, because you've got like a 5800?
No, 5900X.
Oh, yeah, then you've got resizable bar. It's probably already on in your BIOS. You probably didn't even notice.
Yeah, and it's super easy to overclock. It's basically got an app that you run in, that sits in your system tray to play with those settings. But I almost never overclock it, except for recently with Dragon's Dogma. I've been overclocking it a little bit because it's been goofy. But, yeah, long story short, the CPU performance in towns is really rough. For anybody under a 3 series card, and I'm talking like under a 3080, honestly, like 3600 probably having difficulty. Any 2 series or 1 series cards are probably having a lot of difficulty.
I guarantee you. If a 3090 is struggling, there's no way anything below. 3070s could probably chug it, but you're probably looking at pretty low quality settings on some of the textures to get it there.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy about like how resource intensive that game is, but the game is very large. The gameplay is pretty similar to the last one, though. It has a lot more story up front and it lets you know a lot more about what's going on up front than the other one did. The other one was really bare bones in the story. You really had to look for it to get it going. Where this one is a lot more up front with what's going on. There's a lot more voice dialogue. There's a lot more finding, the story presents itself a lot easier. I think that this one does a much better job of that. The design of this game is different than a lot of games. I think it follows similar design decisions as Souls in that there are some quest markers, but not a lot. A lot of it depends on you reading the quest notes and kind of figuring out what you need to do, and it doesn't lead you by the hand, which I like. So, like, there was this one quest I was doing where, I won't spoil it too much, but essentially there's somebody that's poisoning patients, right? And I'm looking for evidence. And minor spoiler here, skip ahead like 2 minutes if you don't want to hear it. But essentially I had to go down and I had to find I had to find the former patients, right? Like the note says the names of them, right? But doesn't say where they're at. But I'm in a spot in town where like a certain type of people live. I figured they'd be at the local bar. So I went to the local bar and talked to all the patrons in the bar. And then one of those patrons happened to be the former patient. And then after talking to both of them, I found a doctor in a town that was far away that could analyze the sample of the medicine that I grabbed. So then I went there and it said, oh, well, it'll take me some time. So I was like, all right, I'm going to do a quest and I'll come back to him. So then I came back to him and he had to analyze the stuff. And then it said, basically, like all the quest points were filled in. It just said that I needed to turn her into the guards. And I was like, how do I do that? I was like, well, there was another quest where I grabbed somebody and like things happened, right? So I went over, found where I thought she would be, which would be down in the area where she was tending to patients. And then I just used the grab button, which then arrested her, which then guards showed up. And then I got like 10,000 gold. And then, you know, explanation of what happened to her, right? So, like, it didn't really tell me much. It gave me enough to go on, but I had to use my head to kind of figure out where to go next, which I liked. Like, right now, I have a pretty clear quest log, but the way that I've noticed things happening in this game is it's like, okay, well, the quest log's clear. I'm going to have to come back in a couple of days, and there'll be more things to do. And I know who the quest giver is. That's going to help me progress the story. And like, I have another person who's looking for lore on dragons that hasn't told me there's a new quest, but I just slayed another dragon. So I need to go back and talk to her and see if that kind of prompts me into a new quest. There's also a whole bunch of area I haven't explored, like the game in the same way of Souls, right? Like you just go exploring and beating bosses, right? And that's kind of how this game plays out. So there's a whole bunch of dark areas. I'm just going to go out exploring and see what I find. We were talking earlier, we were trying to figure out when we're going to start the show. I was fighting a lich and that I just found. I found this area that was just straight undead, and I need a lot of materials from undead to kind of unlock some of the upgrades I have for the stuff I have so far. So I went there, and I just landed on that. I was on there's these like, I think they're lizard statues. But anyways, these statues are always, their head's always pointing in a direction, very much like Souls did, or Elden Ring did. So I looked in that direction, and I see nothing but fog. It's like, okay, I wonder what that is. So then I followed my way over there. That part of the map kind of unlocked, and I realized that whole area is in fog, so it's kind of hard to tell if it's day or night. And that whole area is full of undead, so liches, skeletons, basically zombies. And, like, there's these ghosts that are taking these dead corpses and raising them back to life. And they're pretty hard to defeat, honestly, without fire. But, that open worldness of, like, just go adventure and find stuff is pretty neat. I like that, like, the health system, and I don't remember this from Dark Arisen. It's just been 10 years since I've played that, like, religiously. But as you take damage, right, like you can fill back up your temp health with a heal item, or if you've got a mage in your party, which I do, he'll heal you if you ask for heals, or he'll just do it on his own. But every time you take damage, it like takes chip damage off your total health bar, right, to a point where like at a certain point you're at like a quarter health that you can fill back up. And then you've got status elements that are happening to you as well, like with the dragon, I kept catching on fire because, you know, he breathes fire. I do like the mechanics of fighting big creatures, of climbing on their backs and doing lots of damage. I've been mostly playing a rogue, although I played a Ranger for a little bit. The bow play is not is fun, but not as fun as climbing on creatures' backs and stabbing them in the face or in the back of the head, or climbing under their chest and stabbing them in the heart. Like, that part of the rogue gameplay is really fun, so I've been doing that a lot. Although I kind of plan on unlocking a new class. But the other thing is, like, so you create your main character, right? Which, like I said, you can change your face at any point. You also create a main pawn. And so the pawns are like the soulless people that only the Arisen, which is the main character in both games, can command. And so your main pawn levels up with you, and you can change his abilities, and you can change his gear. Or his or her or whatever, right? You create that pawn, and it can be a person or a beast. And then when you're at the Riftstones, you can summon, depending on where you are and where your friends are in the game, you can summon your friends' pawns into your game, and then they get Rift points for doing quests with you. And you can also set quests. So, like, I have mine set to do a quest where I want it to, I want more knowledge of Cyclops with my pawn, which means it'll give more call outs about it and do better damage. Like, they'll say, go for the eyes or whatever. So I gave my pawn like 100 gold to take with him on adventures with other people. And every time you rest at an inn, he'll say that he's acquired new knowledge, and that means that other people have seen your pawn and used him. And they come back with the experiences they had while they were traveling with someone else. Your pawns that you summon don't level up with you. And I think that's by design, because it wants you to, they only level up with the main person that created them. So once you get to a certain level, like, it's smart to swap out your pawn with somebody else's pawn, right? Or swap out the pawns you have with new pawns. And you can't, like, if they just get, like, fucking KO'd by a dragon, like in my case, I had everybody but myself survive the attack. Those pawns are no longer available to me. If I added them to favorites, I think I could resummon them, though I haven't tried that, because every time they just, like, flat out KO'd, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to grab some new pawns that are higher level. So anyways, you can acquire them sometimes. If they're close to your level, they don't cost anything. If they're a little bit above your level, they cost rift points, which is fine. And you can search by abilities or whatever, and they will, like, tell you as you're traveling, oh, when I was with my lord, my previous lord, there was a chest that was by here that I discovered. You want to see it. And so you hit the go button, and then you follow them, and they lead you to a chest. Or you might be doing a quest and be like, oh, I have knowledge of where you need to go next. So in one case, I was looking for something, and the pawn led me to the area where the jail was. And he said, oh, you might try talking to a bandit about this. And I knew where the dungeon was. So I snuck into the dungeon, and I talked to one of the people in jail, and they asked for 500 gold, which I gave them. And they told me where to find this item that I was looking for was. Gave me a really good idea of where to find it. So then I had a quest marker on my map of where to go. So, and I wouldn't have known that if my pawn didn't lead me to it. If the person who was playing that pawn before, whether it was in somebody else's party or it was with their main character, hadn't also done that quest. And so, like, that part's neat. And the open world discovery of just, like, go kill things and go find things is pretty neat. There's a dynamic day and night cycle that happens. At night, it does get harder. But there's unique things at night, right? It is kind of fun to just have your lantern on you, and you're looking a particular direction, and you see a few pinpricks of light, and you don't know if those are goblins or if those are people, right? Or if you see a camp, you don't know if those are bandits at the camp or those are friendly people at a camp. You'll also randomly run into pawns as you're going about the world. Like, they're just walking all over. And sometimes parties of people, and I don't know if the parties of people represent other people in the world that are playing too. I haven't quite figured that out, but, like, in one case, I was too far away from a Riftstone to summon a new pawn, but my main tank had dropped. I happened upon a warrior that was walking down the trail. He asked me if I wanted to use his services. I said yes. Now I had a warrior back in my party. Crap thing is, my warrior that I did have dropped the things that I had on him. because he, like, fucking got punted into the ocean. Like, we're fighting an ogre, and this ogre, like, just smacked him, and he went, like, 100 yards out into the ocean and just died. So, like, there's no retrieving him. But I finished the fight, and I was pawnless for a while, and I was like, oh, fuck, I'm going to have to go find me another main tank, because I haven't been playing main tank. But, yeah, there's more classes that unlock as you go. I've been playing mostly Thief and Archer. I know I just unlocked Sorcerer. And I know there's probably some kind of master class for Thief, so I'm, like, just decking it out. But my Thief does so much damage. Like, it's hard for me to put him down and say, oh, I want to play a Warrior that sword and boards, because that Thief's gameplay is so fast. Like, he's got something called, like, gut and disembowel or whatever, but basically, like, say I'm running out of stamina while I'm climbing on something and I just want to do a big attack and get off and regain some stamina, literally hit the combo and, like, he does this huge ass attack, and, like, if I'm already on a weak point or I'm on the face or I'm on the back of the guy's head, like, he just, like, takes chunks of life off just on his dismount. It's so crazy. But he's great versus big characters because they focus on the main tank and I'm just stabbing the fuck out of this thing in his neck. Like, it has a little bit of that Shadow of the Colossus feel to it while you're doing that. Like, I thought Harpies would be a big deal. So then I had my Archer for a while and I just shoot him out of the sky because they sing a song and put you to sleep. But a Rogue has, like, a rope with a barbed hook on the end, and he can throw it out and grab the Harpies out of the sky and pull them to the ground. I can also, like, have somebody's, like, throwing rocks at me or shooting arrows at me on a ledge. I can do the same thing and pull them off a ledge and just kill them with that. Or pull them off balance to where their belly's facing me, and now I can stab them in the belly. Like, it's such – he's got such good tools. The Rogue is, like, so good. And I didn't think I'd be playing a dex-based character. He has no block, but, like, you just buzzsaw your way away from death or do a whole bunch of dodges to get out of the way of death. Like, he kills shit so fast, it's hard to get rid of him. But,
Dice, Ed, I mean, your assless chaps are great.
I did have assless chaps for a while. There's a lot of, like, scandalous girl armor in this game. I had the assless chaps for quite a while. I just found upgrades to them, like, this morning, thank God. I'm so sick of seeing my guys' man cakes. Like... I sent you guys a picture because I thought it was funny. But I had a shirt that was pretty short. And then I had, like, these stockings is what it was, right? So he had underwear on and then stocking. The stockings are like thigh highs. The boots are boots, but he's basically wearing, like, these see-through thigh highs. And so I just had, like, a man cake, like, because I didn't have a cape that was short that was long enough either. So, like, you saw my dude's ass every time he was running. I was so sick of seeing my guy's ass. But,
and I mean, it was a lot of ass.
Yeah, you've got a lot of, customization. Like I was telling Rusty, you can use the tattoos to change colors of skin. I saw something on Steam's community of, like, looking at pictures of what people had created. And I saw somebody that created a two-tone face and separated it with a scar that made it look like it was sewn together with something else. I was like, I like that idea. So I used a tattoo on the body and stretched it up to his neck and his face and lined it up with his cheek and with his mouth. So all the way to the corner of one side of his mouth, all the way to the ear on the other side of his face is this big, big black splotch, right? Or dark green is what I colored it. And then I took the scar that looks like it's roughly sewn like a football and tied that from the corner of his mouth all the way to his ear. And then for the first time in a long time, it was a character I created without a beard, but I liked the idea so much of him looking like he was patched together that it just gave him like a trucker stash. And I can change his features at any point that I want, but I like the way it looks. Like you can do some crazy stuff with two-tone hair too. Like I wanted him to just look rugged, so I did like some kind of rugged hair and made the tips black and the tip or the roots black and the tips white. So he just looks worn out and fucked up, and I like it a lot. So, like, his hair's, like, very much, like, got this, like, he looks like he's been through some shit. But, yeah, the customization is great in this game. You can stretch out their necks or their torsos or their legs, or you could change the size of their ass. I just left default ass. I did not move any ass sliders, but apparently I gave him a lot more cake than I intended.
So you're saying he looks like Eddie Van Halen after a party?
No, he looks a lot more like the Joker without his makeup.
Joaquin Phoenix Joker?
No, more like Heath Ledger.
Ah. Yeah, but that's pretty rough.
Yeah, he looks really fucking rough. But yeah, there's a lot of options of that character creator. My pawn's name's Gerndolf. I wanted to make like a low rent Gandalf. Right now he's looking pretty epic. He's got Kasuga hair from Yakuza Like a Dragon or Infinite Wealth, but it's all white. And then he's got an eye that's closed because I put scars all over that side of his face, so like a closed one eye. He's a pretty epic wizard, and he's been getting used a lot. Like, that's part of the thing. If you make an interesting enough looking character, people will use him regardless. So every time I go back to an inn, I've got like four or five different people that have used my pawn, and I get rift points. Like, that's something you can buy. You can buy rift points, but I earn 500 rift points every time I go to sleep because he's been used five or six times. The in-town performance is not a huge thing. There's a section of the game where you go back to town a lot. It was kind of a pain in the ass, but I also spent a lot of time in the open world, and I don't notice that because I'm always hitting my locked frame rate of 119. But I'm probably the worst person to tell you like what the performance is because I've got, aside from my CPU, like I've got a pretty max spec system. I'm running it off an NVMe. I'm running it with 32 gigs of RAM. I'm running with a 4090. I'm running with a high mid-tier CPU at a 5900X. Like, it's not a Threadripper or anything like that, but I'm still running 24 cores, right, at 4.5 gigahertz, which is pretty good. I can't get much better than that unless I start, like, a real high-end i9 would beat it, and I know there's a new AMD chip that'll definitely beat it, but, like, it's a really solid CPU, and I never saw a reason to upgrade. So, or not recently anyway. But yeah, Dragon's Dogma so far, like, if you don't mind unguided gameplay and you want a little bit of Monster Hunter mixed with Dark Souls, that's kind of what it reminds me of because I'm actively getting materials to upgrade my shit. Which is something you do in Dark Souls too. Or Dark Souls in general, all the Souls game, right? Like, you go farm things for materials. Literally just going over the map right now and listening to music while I kill shit and explore. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention, it's just super weird, but they literally just use a 4K FMV for all of your cooking animations, and there's different FMVs based on what you cook. It's just a pan through of a hunk of meat or whatever you're cooking over a fire that somebody videoed, and they cue video every time you cook, which is hilarious. It looks really good. I don't know what kind of meat it is. It looks a lot like deer steak that they're cooking. I sent you a picture, but I think I even posted a video of somebody posting it. But it literally just, it's just a video of somebody cooking. I don't know. So far, it's a really good game. I hope it doesn't, like, peter out. I feel like I've just scratched the surface. My girlfriend was like, "Are you going to review that tomorrow?" I was like, "I've barely touched it." She was like, "What do you mean?" I was like, "I listened to track one off the album. Like, I can't review it. So far, what I've got's great." But, you know, at that time, like, 15 hours is not enough time to review a game this massive. So we'll see how massive it is. Like, I kind of ran out of main quest, but I think that's because I've got two things hanging. But it's challenging enough and also not challenging enough. At the same time, like, it's tuned pretty well on the challenge. It's a great game. I hope they fix the issues that are causing performance problems for us PC players. But at the end of the day, the performance you're getting in town is what PS5 people are getting all over. So it's a lock, basically a variable refresh rate 30 for everybody that's not on PC. So we're just bitching and moaning. Because we can go way higher than that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine gaming the whole game on 30 FPS. That would drive me bananas. But do you want to take a break?
Yeah, I think it's about time.
All right, we'll be back. And we're back.
Woohoo!
Had a nice little break. I had to get Amazon packages, and I'm assuming Jason had to poop or something.
I mean, that would be typical, yeah.
So, I wanted to talk a little bit about Dragon's Dogma, because we were just riffing on that to begin with, anyway. It's received a lot of mixed criticism from Steam reviews, whereas press reviews have been generally favorable, and a lot of it is because there's 21 separate DLC purchases available on day one. And people saw that and played it for an hour and then bagged on it, saying, like, what the fuck is this? So some of those are the Art of Metamorphosis, Character Editor, a way to change pawn inclinations, a warp location marker, a wake stone, rift crystals, a gale key, so a jail key, which is something that you can buy, and a harpy snare smoke beacon. I will tell you that I've gotten all of these in game. Some of these I don't even know where I got it from. I've got the harpy beacon in my bag, not sure where that came from. The rift crystals, like I was saying, I get anywhere from about 200 to 500 every time I rest at an inn. Wake stones, you get a device that through the main quest that will show locations of wake stones, so you can just go pick them up. Porta crystals. Minor spoiler, but worth spoiling for everybody, because I would have never figured this out if I just not had been playing the game. You get a porta crystal by doing the archer quest, and you'll do the archer quest by being an archer and then talking to an elf that's at the weapon stand in the first main city. Take that quest to its end. You get a porta crystal. A porta crystal is a place where you can drop this in any spot in the world, and then you can warp to it with fairy stones, but the fairy stones are pretty rare, so I wouldn't do that very often. I've got one in my bag. I'm not using it yet. The jail keys, you can buy those for like 1,000 gold. The change pawn inclinations, I don't know where I got it. I feel like I just got it out of a chest, but that's something I got as well. Like, all of these things are things that you just get in the game. Just play the game. Like, somebody in marketing is an idiot, like I said. But all of this stuff is available in-game, and it's not like it grants you a huge amount of power. In fact, none of this gives you any power. It's a single-player game. I've never been to jail, but I've gotten some jail keys so I can get into jail to talk to people. Never use the harpy snare smoke beaten, because I've always had an archer, or my rogue has the hook of death that can pull them out of the sky. So big fucking deal. Frame rate issues. There's what they said is there's a large amount of CPU usage is allocated to each character in calculating the impact of their physical presence in various areas. Certain situations where numerous characters appear simultaneously, the CPU usage can be very high and may affect frame rate. Their official statement says we're aware of such situation and settings that reduce GPU load may currently have limited effect. However, we're currently looking at ways to improve the performance in the future. And then they're also looking at a way of creating an additional save file so you can completely start over. So this so far is what's dragging it down according to the public. But all of these things are they're real gripes, but yeah, I think you need to dig a little bit deeper into the game before you gripe about it. CPU thing's a real thing, though, and I think it's goofy. Many of you guys, if you're as old as me and Jason, probably played Alpha Protocol at one point. It was an Obsidian RPG. It was delisted on PC a million years ago, back in 2019. It got relisted. So it came out in 2010. It was published by Sega. It was a really janky RPG that was pretty fun. Anyway, there's a definitive edition essentially coming out. It includes all the original music, as well as support for modern controllers, text localization, Windows 10 and 11 compatibility, and cloud safe support. It supports achievements on GOG, which is crazy. It is not a remaster, and everything is basically the same. It's still a 14-year-old game, but that is interesting. I would like to see Obsidian do more. I know they're working on what is it called? Is it called a? I don't know. It's a single player Avowed. It's a single player RPG that looks kind of like Skyrim. So interesting news if you are interested in that. I've got some other things, but I was going to let you talk for a second, Jason.
Well, Larian Studios founder Sven, don't ask me to say the last name. I think it's Vinky. Came out this week and said that Larian Studios will not be staying with the Baldur's Gate and Dungeons and Dragons franchises, and instead they're moving on to their next adventure. You know, he confirmed that some of the things that went into this decision is the fact that due to recent layoffs at Wizards of the Coast, you know, a lot of the D&D team that the studio worked with is no longer there. So, unfortunately, doesn't look like if we do get a Baldur's Gate 4, it's not going to be from Larian.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, but
kind of sucks.
Yeah.
That said, I'll still look forward to whatever they do next. I mean, so far they've not let us down with anything. So, so there's that. Also this past week, Horizon Forbidden West's PC port, released, and according to all reviews so far, it's, going very well with very minimal bugs, especially when you compare it to PlayStation's last PC port with The Last of Us. So that's good news. I look forward to playing the game eventually now that that's on PC.
I know something that's happening. So like Last Epoch dropped, right? And a lot of people really like the way that you can really customize loot in that game. I do too, right? You end up using stuff for a fairly long time, but you can upgrade the hell out of it. And then it's good for 2 or 3 or 4 hours before you need to upgrade again. I haven't hit max level, but in general, like it's got some great customization options for it. Well, Diablo is season 4 is going to happen in April, early April. I can't remember the date. I'll probably find it here in a second, but anyways, they're going to let you customize loot. Like completely customized loot. So things like there's a lot of major changes, right? So item stats are now simplified into flat bonuses, like more damage and more health. Items will be with stats like intelligence and strength will only drop for classes that have benefit. So sorcerers won't see strength items. Legendaries in World Tier 4 will almost always drop at max item power. Uniques will drop in World Tiers 1 and 2, and uber uniques can drop from level 55 plus monsters, giving you build defining items to level up. You can now trade yet legendary and unique items you haven't crafted on to other players. The gold cost to reroll stats through enchanting will hit a cap instead of exponentially increasing, which was a big deal. Every legendary aspect in the game will be available in your Codex of Power. When you salvage legendary items, the best aspect rolls are added onto your Codex of Power for unlimited uses on other items, which is awesome. Ancestral, legendary, and unique items, also ubers, can drop with stats already upgraded before you start crafting. So they're completely redoing that. Helltide will show up on all world tiers with more monsters and new summonable boss. There'll be a new boss who drops the same items as Duriel. The pet of Artificers houses timed, randomized dungeons of increasing difficulty will be there. New tormented bosses will have a higher chance to drop uber and uniques, and will drop the resplendent spark. You need 4 to craft an uber of your choice on your first skill. There'll be class changes, and there's going to be a week-long PTR starting on the 2nd of April. Okay, so it'll be May 14th when that launches. So if you're looking to go back into Diablo, May 14th is probably the date that you want to do it. RimWorld has got an expansion coming out. So on the beta test right now, they've got something called Anomaly. And Anomaly is... So the way that I'm reading from the Steam page, it says, expansion begins when your colonists accidentally provoke a mad superintelligence. From then on, madness manifests. Monstrous creatures, mind-bending mysteries, infiltrating parasites, insanity-shredding phenomena that twist the whole world around you. It's inspired by classics like Cabin in the Woods, The Thing, The Cthulhu Mythos, Hellraiser, and many more. It goes beyond fighting monsters. The expansion presents ominous, puzzling, and mind-controlling and earth-shaking threats to build your personal horror story. So, that's an interesting change. There's a whole bunch of new mechanics to go with it. They're wanting to go with more of a horror-themed thing for RimWorld, which RimWorld's great anyway. So, I could see myself getting into that.
Heck yeah.
Path of Exile is not quite ready. There's a whole bunch of news on the things that have changed with it. They said they think... So there's a tweet that says, while we think we'd be able to get the game's content ready in time, we underestimated how long it'll take to get the gameplay polished to a standard we're happy with. We're still going to be doing alpha testing in June, but we're going to be delaying the beta until later this year. So it was initially going to come out in June in the beta. That's not going to be a thing. I think Path of Exile 2 is going to come out late this year. Possibly next year for the full release. But I know Rusty will be happy if I don't need a doctorate in some... in STEM discipline, then where there is some good build guides out there that can kind of walk me through what to do, that would be nice, because holy shit, I am so... That was my only problem with Path of Exile. It just took too long to figure out.
Yeah, I can see that.
The Fun Pimps with 7 Days to Die at PAX was demoing their console edition, so they finally figured out what to do with that, and they're working on the console edition for new players. The consoles, after they lost rights to it, to Telltale Games, so that's exciting. And then, for whatever reason, because it's in like Alpha 700 right now, they are releasing another game in Alpha that is also 7 Days to Die. It's called 7 Days Blood Moons. It's a 4v1 fight to the death. So basically they have one person that is the director of the zombies, and then three people that are trying to survive. It's an interesting take. It has got a listing on Steam right now. I don't play those types of games, so who knows what happens with that. They don't have a date on the Steam page.
Of course not.
But 7 Days to Die has been in alpha since like 2013. Like, we're at 11 years of alphas. Which is fine, because that game just changes, and you just go back to it and be like, okay, what's changed in the last two alphas over the last year? And then you play it for a while, and you're like, all right, I've had my fill. That's why I have so much time in it, because every year or so, I go back and see what's changed. Nice. And I've already talked about it, I think, this year. Like, I went back to it either this year or late last year and played a fuckload of it for a while. And I was like, okay, I had my fill. I'm going to go play something else now. One last thing I had is... there was a re-release of Battlefront on PC by Aspyr, and they released it with 364-person servers for nearly 10,000 users, and it didn't work at all. There's also reports of them using other people's mods as part of the release. The game clocks in, I want to say, at like $30. Right now they've added more servers, but still, like, when it started, like, 364 person servers for 10,000 people is crazy. But, it's been sitting at mostly negative. It's a full blown remaster, but I don't know that I'd play it. Like, it still kind of looks pretty dated. I used to play that a lot back on PS2. It's been a long time.
I'd say Battlefield's a long time ago.
Or Battlefront.
And it's not...
a 20-plus-year-old game. I was playing that when I still lived with my parents in high school, I think. Or maybe it was one of the summers when I was coming home from college. Like, it's super old.
And it's not even... The thing about Battlefront is it's not going to be an older game that ages well, you know, because of mechanics. Like, for example, you know, you can go back if you get the itch and play KOTOR. And even, you know, even with the what mods are out there to up-res some of the textures, etc., it still looks dated, but because the story and the gameplay are so good, you don't mind replaying the game that way, right?
Right.
But Battlefront, where it's just, for the most part, a highly cooperative and multiplayer game, for a lot of the mechanics to work really well, just doesn't cross me as one of those type of titles.
Yeah.
Even for Star Wars. Like, I think they're stretching it there a little bit.
Yeah. I didn't really have a whole lot of news aside from that. There's a rumor going around on Discord that Resident Evil 9 is supposed to release next year to an open world on new tech. But we shall see. That is just straight rumor off Discord.
Yeah, I'll believe that when I see it. I think it'd be extremely hard for that team to go open world without making some pretty significant changes that would basically make the game not Resident Evil anymore.
Yeah, probably so. But did you have anything else that I missed?
No, I think that's pretty much everything significant.
All right. Well, where can you find us?
Find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/TheRealTiltCast, and search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find friends of the show. You've got For the Love of Gaming. You've got BMFcast.com and TVGP.TV. They play Resident Evil games that we don't. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right.
Peace.